A mad, but surprisingly persuasive, idea came to him. That these were, in truth, agents of the Crimson King. And when he opened the box, the last thing he'd see would be a primed Sneetch counting down the last few clicks to red zero. And the last sound he'd hear before the world blew up around him would be their mad laughter and a cry of, "Hail the Red King!" It wasn't impossible, either. But a point came where one had to trust, because the alternative was madness. "If Ka will say so, let it be so," he thought, and opened the box. 12. Within, resting on dark blue velvet, which they might or might not have known was the color of the royal court of Gilead, was a watch within a coiled chain. Engraved upon its gold cover were three objects: a key, a rose, and, between and slightly above them, a tower with tiny windows marching around its circumference in an ascending spiral. Roland was amazed to find his eyes once more filling with tears. When he looked at the others again, two young women and one old man, the brains and guts of the Tet Corporation, he at first saw six instead of three. He blinked the phantom doubles away.
"Open the cover and look inside," Moses Carver said. "And there's no need to hide your tears in this company, you son of Stephen, for we're not the machines the others would replace us with if they had their way."
Roland saw that the old man spoke true, for tears were slipping down the weathered darkness of his cheeks. Nancy Deepner was also weeping freely, and although Marion Carver no doubt prided herself on being made of sterner stuff, her eyes held a suspicious gleam. He depressed the stem protruding from the top of the case, and the lid sprang up. Inside, finely scrolled hands told the hour and the minute, and with perfect accuracy, he had no doubt.